Welcome to a special edition of the View from 22 podcast. I'm Fraser Nelson, editor of The Spectator, and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman, assistant editor, and James Forsyth, political editor, who are in Birmingham having listened to the Prime Minister's speech. So we're going to listen to some clips in a bit, but James, what was your overall impression? He's been getting some plaudits. Some people have been saying the best one he's given.
I think this was the speech that showed David Cameron really wants to win the next election. He understood that he needed a game changer. That's where the big offer on tax came from. He's been reluctant to do that, but he has pulled that out at both the bottom end and the middle. You know, promising, or the top, I should say, more accurately, promising to take everyone working the minimum wage out of tax altogether, and to raise the 40p threshold. It's quite a balanced Tory message on tax, but it's also a very traditional Tory message, which is we'll cut your taxes, Labour will put them up.
Let's listen to that clip on tax now.
We will also do something else. The 40p tax rate was only supposed to be paid by the most well-off people in our country. But in the past decade, far too many people have been dragged into it, teachers, police officers. So let me tell you this today. I want to take action that's long overdue and bring back some fairness to tax. With a Conservative government, we will raise the threshold at which people pay the 40p rate. It is currently £41,900. In the next Parliament, we will raise it to £50,000. So here is our commitment to the British people. No income tax if you're on minimum wage. A £12,500 tax-free personal allowance for millions of hard-working people. And you only pay 40p tax when you earn £50,000.
Isabel, that part was designed to cheer the Tory faithful, and it certainly seems to have done, doesn't it?
Yes, well, they liked the announcement on taking people on the minimum wage out of tax, but they loved the announcement about raising the threshold for the 40p tax. They really cheered that bit. And because it was a surprise, it was a rabbit, actually, that made it all the better. It hadn't been briefed overnight. There was a real sense of anticipation in the hall when he kept talking about tax, having talked about the personal allowance.
Yeah, and this is one of the tougher things to do in politics, isn't it, James? Because the Tories are forever paranoid about being seen as a party of the rich. And here they are, basically giving a tax cut for the best paid 10%.
Yes, but I thought he made the argument for it in the right way, which is this, which is this was a tax rate that was designed to hit the super rich. It's now hitting the, you know, the head of English in a large comprehensive school. And I think that £50,000, you know, I think it would have gone up to £47,500 anyway. But £50,000 is a nice round number.
Another key part of his speech, perhaps the most emotional, was when he sought to wrestle the NHS back from Labour. Here's what he had to say.
I'm someone who has relied on the NHS and whose family knows more than most just how important it is. Who knows what it's like when you go to hospital night after night with a sick child in your arms, knowing that when you get there, there were people who will love that child and care for that child just as like it was their own. And how dare they suggest I would ever put that at risk for other people's children? How dare they frighten those who rely on a National Health Service?
Isabel, he doesn't tend to mention his late son very much. He did here. He wanted to make this personal. What do you think he was trying to achieve?
Well, I think he was very emotional as he talked about going to hospital night after night with a child in his arms, as you would be. And I think what he was basically doing was trying to claim the moral high ground from Labour, who are always very good at saying quite explicitly, we have the moral high ground. But there's something in the Tory mentality that makes it much more difficult for them to say that. Today, he really did do that. He told them that they shouldn't dare lecture someone like him who'd experienced the NHS to such a degree. And they shouldn't dare claim that he was trying to undermine the NHS. So he did the same with education as well. But the NHS passage was particularly powerful. I think the only sparks of passion that came from the Labour conference last week were on the NHS, and it is a sufficiently big issue in voters' minds for the Tories to need to neutralise Labour attacks, because it really is the only place that Labour has to go. So they're going to go very hard on the health service in the next few months in the run-up to the election.
And James, were you surprised to see him be so overtly emotional? It's very seldom he does that.
No, I was more surprised to see him to be so angry. I felt there was, I thought there was a real genuine anger there. And I think there's also, it was a, when Cameron first became Tory leader in his first conference speech as leader, he said he could, you could sum up his priorities in three letters, NHS. And I think because of his family circumstances, it had a particular resonance. I thought today reminded voters of that. And I think it's interesting in that if Labour wants to fight the election on the NHS, if Cameron is prepared to talk in these terms, I think it will give voters pause, because when Labour talk about the NHS being privatised, I mean, as someone who wouldn't think that was necessarily a bad thing, I really don't quite see the evidence for this. And I mean, if Cameron is prepared to take the argument in such emotional, angry terms to Labour, I think it makes it harder. And I think he's also done the policy thing that he needed to do, which is to shore up by continuing the NHS ring fence. He can say, you know, look, we're still going to spend more money than Labour. And I think that makes it harder for Labour to land the blows that they need to land on the NHS.
He also tried to land some blows on Labour on education, specifically on the education spokesman, Tristram Hunt. Here's what he had to say.
Tristram Hunt, the shadow education secretary, like me, had one of the best educations that money can buy. But guess what? He won't allow it for your children. He went to an independent school that wasn't set up by a local authority, but no, he doesn't want charities and parents to set up schools for your children. He had the benefit of world-class teachers who happen not to have some government certificate. But no, he wants to stop people like that from teaching your children. I tell you, Tristram Hunt and I might both have had an education at some of the best schools in our country. But here is the difference. You, Tristram, like the rest of Labour, want to restrict those advantages. I want to spread them to every child in our country.
So Isabel, normally the only two Labour people he mentions is Ed Miliband and Ed Balls. But Tristram Hunt seems to get it in the neck this time.
Yes, and Cameron gave a really personal attack on Tristram Hunt. He talked about his background. He told the conference hall, Tristram Hunt and I might both have been educated at some of the best schools in our country, and then said that Tristram Hunt wanted to deny that privilege to other children. It was another way of accusing the Labour Party of being quite hypocritical on the two areas where they claim again to have the moral high ground. And it was effective because it was a sort of, it moved on from the ridiculing that he was doing of Ed Miliband and Ed Balls. This was a serious attack about Labour ideology and about Labour denying children an education while the Tories want to spread privilege. And it was a very effective contrast, I thought.
And James, it's funny that he referenced his own Etonian education. And normally he runs a million miles from that. So
yeah, I think Tristram Hunt won't be very happy that Michael Gove is now in his new role as chief whip, kind of almost on semi-permanent secondment to Cameron's speechwriting team. I think we might hear a few more of these kind of attacks. I also thought that the other element behind it is, as Isabel says, this is an attempt to give kind of moral purpose conservatism. You know, and I think for the first time, he's previously tried to say that, you know, he wants every child to have as good an education as he had. Now, when the Tories focus group, this kind of commitment they said to give people and everyone in the state system an education as good as a private school education, they found that voters actually hated it because they found it kind of patronising. But I actually think that kind of turning the anti-politics move back on Labour, saying, you know, they're toffs too and they're hypocrites, you know, it might not be particularly edifying for politics, but I suspect it might be quite effective.
Now, he struck a stroke of humility when he was talking about his role, not as a leader, but of a public servant. This is what he had to say.
I don't claim to be a perfect leader, but I'm your public servant, standing here wanting to make our country so much better for your children and mine. I love this country, and I will do my duty by it.
So, Isabel, was he trying to contrast himself with Ed Miliband here?
Yes, he was. He was basically setting himself up as the real leader, the man who is capable of doing the job of delivering a speech, of remembering the deficit. And it was effective as a passage because he went very quiet. And he said quite humbly, he said, "I don't claim to be a perfect leader," acknowledging some of the gripes that many in his party have had with him. I think it was also an attempt to revise the line that he gave when he was asked why he wanted to be prime minister, which was, "Because I think I'd be good at it." Actually, you probably need to set out a little bit more than just that. And he did that in this section of the speech.
And of course, he couldn't resist teasing Ed Miliband for forgetting the deficit. Here's what he had to say.
"And while I'm on the subject, of big economic questions our country faces, on spending, on tax. Did you hear Ed Miliband last week? He spoke for over an hour, but didn't mention the deficit once. Not once. He said he forgot to mention it. Look, Ed, people forget their car keys. My children sometimes forget their homework. I once even forgot that I left Nancy down the pub. Samantha, I'm sorry, it won't happen again. But let me say this, you cannot be Prime Minister of this country and forget the most important issue that we face.
And James, he finished his speech by saying the next election is a battle between two people, him or Ed Miliband. That was intended to, I guess, burnish his own credentials as being the Tories' single greatest asset, but also to take minds away from Nigel Farage.
Yeah, I think the Tory sense here, the mood at the conference has been surprisingly upbeat, because the Tories believe that they will beat Labour. The question is, are UKIP going to end up beating the Tories? So I think that's why you saw the kind of, if you vote UKIP, you get Labour, that shift into the demotic to say that you could go to bed with Nigel Farage and wake up with Ed Miliband. I mean, all this is an attempt to tell people that if they vote UKIP, they will get Labour. The Tories are convinced that this is their most effective squeeze message on UKIP. I think Cameron was also trying to do something else, because there was a lot of self-deprecation in the speech, far more than usual, kind of a reference to his gaffe about talking about what the Queen purring down the line to him on the telephone on the night of the Scottish referendum, and all those kind of things. I think he's also trying to say to the voters, which is the perfect servant passage too, I might not have got everything right, but I get more things right than wrong, and you don't have to like everything that I've done and agree with every decision I've made to still vote for me.
James Forsyth and Isabel Hardman, thank you very much.